Welcome back to the Weekly Juice. As always, Ryan and Corey here, joining you for another episode. Today, we're going to update you on our real estate journey and let you know kind of where we're at in the process of securing homes and renting them out to people.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It's literally what we do.
Yeah. Just a caveat, this episode was actually recorded after our next three. So we put out some posts on Instagram about the fresh squeeze versus the last drop. It's going to be the last drop. Sticking to it. But you'll hear in the end of the
next. Why are we sticking to it? Instagram poll for the people, by the people.
Yeah, it was like a landslide.
The tribe has spoken.
Yeah,
it was a landslide. It's the last drop.
Yeah. So the next three episodes, which are going to be amazing episodes, by the way. But at the end of the episode, you'll hear us like go back and forth like a bunch of idiots trying to figure out which one to do. And then the people told us what to do.
Yeah, the reason we're bringing this one up today is, we just closed on a property.
Yeah.
Super excited about it, and we want to practice what we preach, right? And kind of tell you guys about it, let you know kind of the experience we went through, and hopefully it'll help you on your journey.
Yeah, we want to go through the entire process, right? So we figure that we can interview a lot of people and talk about what they do, but talking about what we do kind of sends some validity to our story. And also, we just want to share it with other people because I think there are other people that are right in line with the process that we are. And hopefully we help you, right? Like that's our goal.
100%. And just to show, like, if we can do it, you can do it.
Guaranteed. So that's the only reason you and I even got started, because we saw other people doing it. And like, we can do it.
Yes. So we're going to go back and forth on a bunch of different, I guess, topics in the process / journey, whatever. So like, we're going to start out here. I want to go in for you, Cor. Can you dive in a little bit to our Cleveland story? I think it brings us way back to, I think, maybe episode, one of the first 10 episodes.
Ian was episode 11, I think. Ian Tvardovskaya.
You crushed it.
Yeah, he's awesome. We texted him today. He's absolutely crushing it in Cleveland. And we obviously met through the podcast, right? We said, you know what, let's go out there and meet this guy. He's a property manager. He's an investor. Anyway, can't say enough good things about Ian. But we drove out there. We're like, we're going to go on a Friday, meet with him, go to Columbus, check out a bunch of properties in Columbus, then drive an hour or two hours, I think, north to Cleveland, check out properties in Cleveland, feel out the area and see if it works, see, you know, what his systems are. I mean, Ian does it all, rehabs, he does everything. But we just were like, is this an area that we want to buy in? And it was a hell of a ride.
Totally was. So just to give a little bit more background, Ian, property manager, has 16 doors of his own.
And he might have more by now.
He might have more by now. And he also manages a bunch of others. And he's been in the industry for a while. You can listen to his episode, go back to episode 11 if you want to see who we're talking about. But the reason we were thinking Columbus or Cleveland is the barrier of entry was much cheaper than it is out here.
Totally.
We throw numbers around all the time, you know, around Philly, Jersey area, you're looking at between, I don't know, I would say about $200,000 and $400,000 for a property. Whereas in Cleveland, you could potentially start at a $50,000 property and go up to like 120.
Yeah. And actually what ended up talking us out of it was we did some research on Bigger Pockets, and we looked at like this, somebody came up with like the ultimate guide to investing in Cleveland. And it was just talking about some of the areas we were looking at in, and that they ended up being like quote unquote war zone areas. And we just were like, look, for our first as an LLC, as a partnership, which we'll get into, long distance, we just rather see more of a balance of cash flow and appreciation, not just cash flow. And when you get in that barrier to entry at the $50,000 mark, your cash flow is going to be skyrocketing. But tenant problems, maintenance, managing from a distance, we want the balance between the property value is going to go up and you're going to have a decent amount of cash flow, as opposed to a ton of cash flow and the property value might be 50% higher in 20 years as opposed to 400% higher, right?
Right. I think we wanted to hedge our risk a little bit for the first one, especially together, right? Like we've purchased properties, but not specifically together. And going out of market, as you mentioned, is like you want to be, at least our opinion is we wanted to be closer to it to be able to be more hands-on, or else we would have relied on Ian for everything. And that's not fair to just throw everything
I don't on. Think he would have cared, to be honest, but I think that there might be a future for us to do that with 100%. Him. But I feel good about where we invested. We're in New Jersey, and we can get into talking about it. But Anyway, the story out there is we just toured a bunch of properties with him. We went around. He showed us some of the rehabs he's done. He showed us and just like what the A-class area, B, C, D areas. And we just got a really good feel for his business. And it's, again, organic networking. It was a great trip.
That was phase one for us. Exactly. And it was awesome. And we were talking on the ride back, 7-hour ride back. Obviously, we had a lot to talk about. But yeah, it was just kind of cool to say, hey, listen, like in a couple months, we're going to be able to look back on this. And regardless if anything comes to fruition, this is part of our story.
Exactly.
And it was amazing. It was awesome. I had people hitting me up. They're like, why the hell are you in Cleveland during the middle of a pandemic and in the summer? I was like, meh. Invest in real estate.
Yeah, exactly. And Ian's going to be a friend for a long time. And 100%. Hopefully a business partner at some point, you know? So
yes.
We had this conversation, like, why wouldn't we do something like this? You know, it's an investment in ourselves, and it's just a cool thing to do. And it's better than just sitting back and waiting for the game to be played by itself. Like, you got to go play it. So
we made a decision. We called each other and said, hey, should we do this? It took us literally 5 seconds to decide. And we were just like, let's just give it a try. It
took us a lot longer to decide whether or not we were going to actually purchase the property or not. We were going back and forth for a while. But I'm really glad we made the decision not to. At the end of the day,
knowing what we know now, yes. Yeah. I am purely based, had nothing to do with Ian. It was purely based on the area. Yeah. It was labeled a war zone. We read a lot about it.
Yeah.
It was going to net us $700 a month in cash flow, which is, it's very, or was it more than that?
Bruh. It was like,
it was a triplex.
It was like $1,500 a month in cash flow. It was insane.
All right. Well, now I feel a little bit worse. But either way, it was far away, and we drove by the property, and you know, there's a bunch of different, I think we talk about Rio's episode where he's like, I look for places I'd invest in places where I'd want to live.
I wouldn't live there.
We drove by and we didn't even want to pull up to the front of the house. Really.
Yeah.
We were three houses down.
And I'm sure there are great people that live there on those neighborhoods, and it's, you know, it's all about managing your tenants and getting the right tenants in there, but it was a risk that we just weren't willing to take.
No. Yeah. And you need to know yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Your gut will tell you something too. And
exactly. You know, We're glad we went down that route. And then after we came back from Cleveland, we said we were in the process of trying to do this formation of the LLC, right? How do we get started? And it turns out that the organic networking struck again. I have a mentor. His name is Drew. We haven't had him on the podcast yet, but we will. And he owns an investment company in Philadelphia. He hooked us up with our lawyer in New Jersey. And he said, his name's Tom, you know, we don't have to give last names or anything, but his name's Tom. And we said, Tom will hook you up with getting your LLC started. I'm like, great. We called Tom, and Tom did everything start to finish with the formation of a 50-50 partnership LLC.
Yep.
Right? It was $450. So just to give people some context there, we, you know, that may be a little high, I think, but we wanted to make sure that a lawyer looked over everything. I'm sure LegalZoom's great. I haven't done anything on there yet, but we wanted to make sure that a real estate attorney looked over everything and just made sure that it was, the operating agreement was set, and we thought it was worth the investment, $450.
100%. And there's a bunch of different factors of the $450. It's not just, you know, I don't have the exact breakdown of it, but it's all in. It was $450 for the LLC.
I think the formation of the LLC was only $150.
Right.
We had to pay Tom for his time. He probably charges $250, you know, if it was an hour or two, that's really what lawyers get paid, $200-$300 an hour.
And just knowing it was legitimate and we could actually talk to a physical human being was so much better than going online, at least for us.
It's a good person, though. He does evictions too. So look, you're in the real estate business. I hate to break it to us. We'll have an eviction. It's probably multiple, but just is what it is. So it's good to know that person who does the real estate from the LLC formation side, and he also does evictions, and he just knows the law. So if I ever have a question, yo, we're calling Tom, and he gets it. So it's good advice for people out there that if they want to start an LLC or form a partnership, I think it's worth the $450 to get a lawyer.
I couldn't agree more. And I also lucked out with Tom, and he's also on the board for a lending company.
Yeah.
And we were spitballing questions that we've gotten on the podcast and we've tried to answer, but we had the professional answer them for us, and we felt like he was the guy.
Yeah.
And it's been great so far. So
all it is, we said this multiple times, putting our message out there. I just literally at Thanksgiving spoke to Drew about this. Drew, I met with him for coffee, talking about my mentor. He knew I was into it. he kept me on the fresh of his mind, on fresh on top of his mind, introduced me to Tom. Tom knows a lender. Like, it's just this like domino effect, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the formation of our LLC. Ryan, our 50-50 partners, what we're going to do is we're going to split all of the expenses 50-50, all of the money into projects 50-50, and then all of the cash flow and proceeds and profits 50-50. One of the things that we have to actually do, and we're just being transparent, is like in our operating agreement, we're going to talk about, right now we're both sharing all of the, like the property management, the marketing. Yeah, I think a good idea, what I would recommend if you do 50-50 is like, Corey, you'll handle the books. Rye, you'll handle the maintenance requests. Corey, you'll handle half the property management, and Rye will handle the other half. Like, you can split some of the things.
Split the units, yeah, if you want to.
Or the units, yeah. But what are our strengths, right? And some of us, you and I probably actually have a lot of similar strengths, and then some that are not. So you just find those things. But being 50-50 money, 50-50 expenses, 50-50 profits, I think is really the way to do it. Especially if you both, like we're both in our late 20s and we have the same goals going forward. I think it's a lot harder if you're 28 and then you partner with somebody who's 50. Like, they might have a family of four and you might be single, and just your alignment might be off, right? Yes. Where we're probably going to go on this sort of same trajectory together in terms of like starting a family and all those kinds of things. So our money should align.
It should. And yeah, it's what's important. We talk about this in partnerships all the time, is you want to be on the same page and you need to discuss your goals long term, right? Whereas yep, there's so many different niches, whether it's type of property or whether it's buy and hold or you're going to flip. There's a lot of different avenues to get in and then get out of real estate. You and your partner need to be on the same page.
Yep.
So that way, long term, you stick, it's legally like in writing, you stick to the terms like, hey, listen, Lola, we said we were going to keep this for X amount of years.
Yep. And we talked about that. We said, we put a threshold of 10 years and we said, look, like the next 10 years for this property, it's buy and hold. I personally think that we should hold on to it for as long as we can, like, and just keep building cash flow. And I think we're both on the same page. And then what we'll do is we'll have what's called alignment meetings every 6 months or so, and mm-hmm, just say, where are we? How do we feel about this? Has anything changed? And we'd be naive to think that it's everything's going to stay the same, you know, for our entire journey. So
life changes, right?
Yeah.
But as long as you, everything's built around trust.
Trust. 100%. And you wouldn't want a big trust.
Big trust. Seriously, you wouldn't want to go into business with anyone that you have to share your bank information.
Yeah.
You've seen my social security number. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, we obviously know how much each other make outside of real estate. There's a lot of things that you have to really be trustworthy. There's, for us, and it was a no-brainer because I just know the type of relationship we have, but like communication, transparency, honesty, these are key things. If something comes up, for example, give an example. You were away this past weekend, right? I knew. I was like, Rye's with his family. He's not going to be answering shit. He's going to be doing what he should be doing when he's visiting his family. And I was like, I have to send 50 emails. Like, I have to, we are marketing the unit.
Yep.
And I just knew that it was your time to go on vacation. Like,
you said, I got this.
Yeah.
And you'll get me when it's my turn.
And it has to be that way. You have to be open. And sometimes it's going to feel like 60-40. It's going to feel like 70-30. And then it'll sway the other way. But you just have to be patient with it, because if you're not, it won't work.
Open lines of communication. There can't be any resentment. And sometimes it'll feel like that. You know, you have good days and bad days. But all in all, find the right person to go in with the deal with you. Like, we've been friends for 10 years.
Yeah,
so it's,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It's like,
somebody tried to, I met with somebody, like, I'm not going to say who, just because he wouldn't want to be talked about. But I met with like a real estate investor who's retired, and he's like, never do partnerships. I had 14 partnerships and they all failed. And I think that like everyone needs to take a step back and just learn what's right for them, because this guy was highly successful and it didn't work for him. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't work for you, depending upon your personality type.
I just think about, it reminds me of parents, friends, colleagues telling you what to do in life.
Projecting
like what works for them, what they'd be scared to do. We talked about it on a previous episode. It was like, there's people all along your journey that are going to tell you things that they wouldn't be comfortable doing. And you should not do this because of, this is what they personally feel
Austin's
isn't
episode.
Right.
Austin talked about that. He was like, yeah, his parents wanted him to be a lawyer. He's like, I don't want to be a lawyer. Sorry.
How about Ian?
Ian went even further, and he was like halfway through law school.
Yeah.
Good for, I mean, he's being, you know, successful coming out of doing exactly what he wants to do. So I think,
real quick before we dive too far in, I want to go over partnership pros and cons just because I think it's important for people to kind of just see the breakdown. So for me, partnership pros and like why I think it's a good idea to jump in with someone, especially for your first deal, right? Mm-hmm. Accountability. And that's awesome for us. It's just you hold each other accountable. I don't want to invest X amount of dollars into something. And doing it by myself, I could just kind of play it by ear. Like, hey, I can, you know, this is how my day is going to look like. And some days I'll go full speed. Some days I'll chill. Right, but when you have a partner, you don't want to let that other person down.
Exactly. That's
I would never, ever want to let you down. And to be, if you ask me to do something, and I'm not saying it's because we're just starting out, but it's like, I'm doing it because at the end of the day, I don't want to feel like he doesn't think I'm pulling my weight.
Exactly. So you feel like that whole 60-40 thing. Like if you, we have the both the personalities where if we feel like we're not doing or holding up our end of the bargain, we're going to work harder because we want to make the other person money and we want to make the other person happy. And again, we want to do this so we can live an awesome life. You know, that's the whole point. So when you go on vacation with your family, like that's the reason, or not vacation, you went to visit them, but that's the reason we're investing in real estate.
No, this is the reason though.
So it's like, why would I be like, yo, you got to do all this? It's like, dude, you just spent X amount of dollars, put it into a deal. You want to get this cash flow so you can be more free and have spend time with your family. But anyway,
I couldn't agree more. So you also get assistance with analysis. We talk about this. It's kind of like, it's almost training your brain and going through, you're almost working out, trying to better yourself and perfect your craft when going through like property analysis. It's so much easier to have two people going at leads rather than one person.
Yeah, and answering emails and communicating with tenants, as long as your lines of communication are the same or in sync. But you said something the other day that I never would have thought about. And I forget what it was. It was something with a tenant or prospective tenants. We're going to get into what we're doing with marketing. And I was like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. And it's changed the perspective of how I think about, you know, marketing our property to our tenants. So it's
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what it was. So it wasn't that important, but
yeah, I'll take the compliment. confidence and motivation. I mean, put it this way. It's just, you jack each other up. You get excited. It's something about like when something good happens, you can get excited all day long by yourself. But when you think about like when you're watching a funny movie, how much funnier is the movie when you're with your boys there with you and you're laughing so much harder because you're having a good time than I'm having a good time?
I think it softens the blow for things that bad that happen too, right? Because it's almost like you can make light of it. Like I remember when something happened in the properties that I own by myself, and you kind of dig yourself into this like hole of like, how am I gonna fix this? And it's like, first of all, you're gonna fix it. It's not that hard. Just realize that. Stop being an idiot. But two, if you have something happen when you're like, yo, like a tree fell in the yard, like it's kind of like, guess we got to deal with this. And you just are like, you have 50% of the thought process that's being handled by someone else and you can both go in together.
Right.
Just fix the problem.
You're cutting the expense in half.
Yeah.
But in addition, it's mellowing the other guy out. I know like specifically the other property, you were like, that had to pay $1,200. So I'm like, dude, what you signed up for? And you're like, I know. I just kind of wanted to say it.
Yeah,
like,
I just wanted I was you like, to feel bad
you'll
for
be,
me.
You'll be good, though. And then you just balance each other out. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of reassuring each other and having, like I said, confidence and motivation.
But it doesn't work. I think more often than not, it actually won't work because people shouldn't just do it with their best friend. You know, like, that's
you want to find someone that has strengths where your weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. So you balance out. Granted, I think you and I have, like, we already talked about this. We have a lot of complementary qualities, but you know, I think there's other things that specifically you are go, 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 go. And you're, oh, it's checks and balances, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Cause you're like, hey, did you do this? And I'm like, dude, give me 5 minutes to breathe. But I'm like, holy shit, I didn't do that. I gotta do it.
Yeah. I have, and it's part of the things that I need to do to like actually relax, but I am like that. I'm like,
I love it. I love it. It's sometimes it's like, oh dang, like, I got to do something else first, but then I'm like, wait, no, we need to get this done.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about right now. Like,
well, right now we have something that's pressing and we're going to talk about that in a minute. And that's something that we need to do because every day, essentially every day we lose money.
Yes.
Not now, starting next week we will. So
last thing I want to touch on is expanding your network and pooling resources. So think about all of our, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but like building our team, we basically have two people to go outsource and use our networks to fill the team, which is
amazing. I got
amazing.
The realtor, you got the lender, I got the handyman, you got the title company. Like, it literally was like, we just...
That's perfect.
Yeah. Exactly. We're going to talk about that in a couple minutes. Is that what you... Is that...
We can transition there. I will just say, we hyped up partnerships. There are some cons.
Okay.
I do want to cover those really, really quick.
Yeah.
So, when you're... I guess when you're vetting it out or like interviewing and figuring out who you want as your partner, just know there will be personality conflicts, and that sucks. You can ruin a relationship.
You can. Totally. If you think about it, if you don't think about it holistically though, like you have to, when you get into a conflict, just take that step back and just be like, is this a big deal? And then talk it out. But yeah, I'm trying to make it seem good because there are things that are like aren't, that could go wrong.
Totally. Lack of trust. We talk about this, like, a whole relationship is built on trust. So if you don't trust someone to see your bank statements, to see certain information, you shouldn't go into business with them. You're getting in a relationship.
Yeah, if you're worried about somebody stealing money from you, then why would you share the money in the first place?
Profits are going to get cut depending how many partners you have. Yep. It's just the way it is. You're limiting your risk, but you're taking a cut in profits.
Yep.
Mixing business and friendship doesn't always work well. We've seen it a million times. Yeah. You can talk to anyone and they'll say, hey, it just doesn't work.
Yep, we've talked about that.
Unrealistic expectations. You could want to buy and hold for 30 years. I could say, hey, no, listen, I only want it for 5 years, and then I want to sell it, flip it for a price.
Yeah.
You need to talk about it in the beginning. Time, things can change, but you got to remind each other of the long-term goals that you set.
Yeah, exactly.
Then I would say just the last two is like responsibility and like task divisions, like who's going to be responsible for what, that you can feel resentment at certain times.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's actually something that you and I probably need to even get better at. Like, we could admit that. We need to map out what each of us are going to be doing. Because we haven't. And right now, we literally, it was a week ago. So it's like, we need to do that. But.
And then taxes at the end of the day. It's going to be kind of complicated. Oh, we got to split this. It's actually a 50-50. True. It'll be okay. If you have a great CPA, you'll be good to go. But just know that it's not just filing for one person.
That's why when you're in this scenario, it is, in my opinion, beneficial to get a CPA, because it would be hard to do it by yourself.
But. Yes, 100% anyone. If you're going to go forward and create an LLC, just get a CPA.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Okay. So we can go back now. We said we closed a week ago. We're going to talk about the search for our property, and we talk about the property that we closed on, just part of the process and the way through it, and how we ended up coming, how it all came to be. Long story short is I bought a property with like 18 months ago with a good friend of mine who moved to Wisconsin. Okay. And he worked for this group, you know, how Keller Williams has like groups of realtors. Mm-hmm. So he ended up back 18 months ago, connecting me with the CEO of the group. I just called him out of the blue and I was like, Jeff, my partner and I are looking for a property, and I know I worked with Fred previously. Fred's great. And he said, oh yeah, I remember we spoke on the phone, and like he knew who I was, and he's like, I'm going to hook you up with a search. We're going to get you going. But the best thing that happened from that is that Jeff was looking for off-market deals for us. And it was because of a relationship that I had with the previous realtor who hooked me up with his boss. And then we were off and running from there. And this property was it's a duplex in New Jersey. And we ended up getting a good off-market deal because we had an advocate out there that was helping us find this property.
So speaking of relationships again, essentially Jeff had a relationship with the seller.
Yep.
And he knew it was going to be the first deal with us, first of many. We're investors that were planning to do this for a long time. And he essentially took an interest in us and said, hey, listen, I'll cut you guys a deal where I'll trim up my
commission
on it. And if we can get it done, and because I know the seller, and I think, you know, I think it's going to be a good deal for both sides, basically.
Yep.
And for us, we were ecstatic because we've seen, and everyone that, if you're an investor listening to this, you've seen it. People are paying 20% above asking right now in the market.
It's crazy.
It's insane.
And we met the seller. He's a good guy. But realistically, if this would have went on the market, just is what it is, it would have went for more than what we bought it for. It would have. So he wanted to get out of it. He made a profit. Good for him. He left us with one tenant in one side and then a vacant in the other side. And we're going to get into talking about that, but our vacant unit in the other side. But so essentially we were looking for a duplex because we wanted to go in as 50-50 partners. We wouldn't have turned down a single family home, but we feel like that weren't our niches in the small multifamily right now. And our threshold was $400 a month in cash flow. And what ended up happening is, and that's, that can seem like a little high, because I know, well, it's 200 per door, right? Essentially, that was our threshold. We ended up getting much higher than that. So we think, based on our numbers that we run, we will find out. But we're, our cash flow should be much higher than that. And we got in a decent neighborhood, but the units are very, very well maintained and updated with new floor, new vinyl flooring, and there's central AC. And we just feel like it's a good place where people would want to live, potentially raise a family. And it's just, it's a decent area in New Jersey. It's not like an A-class neighborhood or anything, but it's a, it's probably a B or C.
Yeah. I would say probably, yeah, C plus, B minus yeah. neighborhood. Throwing it back to David Grabner's episode, the flooring is...
It makes the whole unit.
The flooring is amazing. It's yeah. got, what is it called again?
It's a vinyl, or a vinyl flooring, or it's laminate. It's a LVP.
LVP, yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. And so,
luxury really, vinyl plank.
Luxury vinyl plank, that's exactly what it is. It's like a light grayish white, and then the walls are white and gray. So it's just, it pops, and it's modern, what people are looking for today. So
and when you market it, people are like, ooh, I like, it doesn't, it's not like these old carpets. You know, you could, I bet you have a bunch of properties in that complex that have, or it's like a HOA type neighborhood that have like just really old shitty units inside. And ours,
we walked in, we, you know, you see the outside and it's decent, but yeah, you, we went inside roof. And we're like, wow, this is clean, this is nice.
Yeah,
purely based on those factors that he mentioned.
It cost him probably $2,500 or $3,000 to do that, and it raised the value of the property. So we ended up closing about a week ago. We went through the entire closing process. It was, we're used to it a little bit now, but we're happy to have our first property together. And we have, like I said, one unit that is a woman who works for Amazon. She's on Section 8, and she's awesome. So she has, and we can talk
about.
She's lived there for 10 years. We will be raising the rent on her in probably 6 months or so, because she's paying well under the value, but she totally gets it. She understands. She wants to stay there for as long as she can. She's awesome. People get thrown off by Section 8, but essentially what happens is she pays, right now it's essentially 50-50. She pays 50% of the rent. The housing authority pays the other 50% of the rent. And she really takes pride in the unit. I mean, it's spotless when I walked in there. And I just think that you shouldn't judge a book by its cover when somebody says, do you take Section 8 vouchers? Because I think it's a lot of people that need the opportunity and are just great people that just don't make a lot of money. It's like really that simple.
People get scared, but as soon as they hear the term Section 8. And
they don't even know what it is.
Exactly. So you got to do your research. Yeah. And for us, it was just a pleasant surprise meeting her. You know, she was well aware that the rent was going to... It hadn't been raised in 8 years. Like, she knew it was going to go up. But yeah. at the end of the day, she takes so much pride in the unit. She writes down every single time something goes wrong with the unit. When a tenant, a Section 8 home inspector comes in, she marks what they thought was wrong, what she thinks is wrong, how she can fix it. She's willing to lend a hand to fix it.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of different things where she feels like a homeowner. She doesn't feel like a tenant.
It's pride. I was going to say pride of ownership, but it's really just like a pride of tenancy. Like she's made that property like it's hers. And you cannot ask for a better tenant in that circumstance. Because, if again, the same communication that goes through with you, and we talked about this in managing tenants, with you and a partner, is the same communication that you need to have with a tenant. Like, if you respect your tenants, and then they respect you, and you're just kind of like, not friends, because it's a business, but like, you just respect each other, and you have an understanding, they're going to take care of your unit.
Be fair, but firm.
Yeah, exactly. So we got a little bit out in this way. We're going to talk about the marketing for the tenant, or for the vacant unit. But do you want to go back and talk about, I talked about how I met, or how we got in touch with Jeff, our realtor, and then you had a connection with the loan officer and the title company. Do you want to mention
sure.
that?
Yeah, sure. I'll just kind of summarize everything here. But essentially, real estate is the business of relationships. And, you know, we already had an episode on building your all-star real estate team. And it's all come down to former relationships and current relationships that I've had and that you've had. And so through my 9-to-5 job, I met a really good mentor of mine, Raymond. And he is a VP of a title company, real estate title company. And he has a a bunch of real estate connections. He sold real estate.
Think about that. You met them through your 9-to-5, right? Right. Like you don't work in real estate, you know? So it's awesome. Yeah.
So it was phenomenal. I started picking his brain about a bunch of things. And like when, you know, me and my wife decided to purchase our first property, he essentially helped me build my team. And then it's parlayed into our relationship, yours and mine, for the 50-50 partnership. And I've used some of the same people, specifically the lender, the title company. And then, you know, they refer contractors, handyman, like they have everything. They have the resources.
Yep. And property managers.
Yes.
That we'll need in the future.
Yeah. If it just works with, if you, obviously you want to call them and interview each person, and you want to just take a word, because they use these guys, they're great.
Yeah.
No, like I just knew they had my best interest. And he made a few calls for me saying, hey, listen, Ryan's doing his first deal. We need the big dogs coming in to help him out.
Yeah.
Because he likes me.
Yeah.
Because I've done so much for him, and he's doing so much for me, which is awesome.
That's literally how it works. And to go off that, so you brought some people to the party and I brought some people to the party, and that's kind of how this works. And we have this team that's forming. We have a handyman who's coming out next weekend to do minor fixes in the property that we negotiated some of the fixes with the seller, and then others that he said, look, I'm not going to do this. We said, fine, we'll bring in a handyman after. Rich, he lives in New Jersey, and I met him through another investor that I know, and he just does handyman work on the side, and he can fix a lot of things. So he's coming in, he's carving out 6 hours out of his morning for us, you know, to go over checklist by checklist of all the things we need to get done. And all that is, that relationship stems from, is Rich coming to my personal residence and my other units, but coming to my personal residence, doing work, and me handing him a check for 20% more than he told me. Like, he's like, this job, he's like, this job is X amount of dollars. And I say, you know what, Rich? Thanks for coming out. I really appreciate it. Here's this and like a tip. And he's like, I'm going to carve out time to help Corey and his partner Rye, because he hooks me up and he pays me on time. And that's the whole point, like, of this business.
And you overcompensated him.
Yeah. And he's just like, why would I not want to do work for these people? You know,
I'll say it time and time again. It's truly all about relationships. And it seems daunting, real estate in general, and specifically
relationships seem daunting to people too, because people think that it's like I gotta be handing out business cards by the dozen.
Some,
you know,
people just want to talk and share their experiences. And like,
what was the other episode we were talking about? It's not even released yet. You guys will hear it soon. But one of our guests says, do you know how often investors want to talk about their properties? Like, just ask them about their properties. They'll talk your ear off, and then you'll be a sounding board for them. And then you may have something to bounce off them. It's just, it's
phenomenal. And a lot of people are like, oh, I need to read this book. I need this. Just ask questions and organically have conversations with people. I'm telling you, that's how we got all our best leads.
Yep.
How we got all our best, what do you want to call them? Team players or members of our team that just do. If you also take care of them, I would say, like, think about like when the holidays come around, shoot them a Thanksgiving text. Hey, just want to say happy Thanksgiving. It's like super basic things you would do with your friend. These are your now colleagues and / somewhat friends.
And tenants as well. Like, send your tenant a Mother's Day gift, right? We talked about that. Like, send your realtor a birthday gift.
Card.
Like, yeah, it's...
It's the little things that go a long way. Think about you if you got a random birthday card from your
Anthony
realtor.
Sent me a Starbucks gift card. Yeah.
Like,
he's our lender.
Come on.
I gave it to Allie. She loves Starbucks. But yeah, like, it's like... Yeah. I thought about that. I was like, oh, he did not have to do that. You know,
at all.
Yeah. So it's
just,
we're going to use them again. I mean, that's the whole point of this, is that we have goals set up where originally my goal was one property a year. I don't know, man.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You're going to blow by that.
Yeah. So
you already did it this year.
Yeah, I did. But
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's funny how you put things into the universe, and if you want them bad enough and you talk about them enough, they'll happen.
Yeah. I mean, I like wake up in the middle of the night thinking about real estate, so that's part of it. Not really, but it's just that
if you
dedicate yourself to something and you want it bad enough, I think that you set a goal and you know, maybe you end up beating that goal, because if you want it that badly. So
it takes action.
We're just getting started here. This is not to toot our own horns at all, but it's just like we're happy about the progress and we're going to keep going.
Yes. So. Cool. So we keep hammering the point in here about relationships, but we get the question a lot. We've asked it a lot. It's like, hey, okay, we're set up with a 50-50 partnership where we specifically decided to do an LLC. What's the deal with banking? Like, how should you set up your system of, you know, collecting rent from tenants, paying your mortgage, and then collecting cash flow?
This is actually a great point. Go ahead.
So just to explain what we did, it was another relationship. We asked, hey, do you have a banker? We want to build a relationship with somebody. We don't want to just go to a random bank and open up an account.
So title.
Yes. Yeah. So I asked Raymond, I'm like, hey, listen, like, who do you use? It's like, funny you ask. I have this woman that I want to introduce you to at Wells Fargo. She's awesome. And to top it off, Wells Fargo, they're one of the most popular banks to lend
for mortgages.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, we want this. Long story short, we went down to Wells Fargo, met in person with this woman, and she was phenomenal. She answered all our questions about business lending and whether we should open up a personal account or a business account, how we're going to split, how if we should have a checking or savings, and kind of dove into what was the best for us at our current situation.
I think the point to hammer here is that if you start an LLC, and this is what we learned kind of the hard way, if you start an LLC, you form a partnership, you have a business entity. Just because you do that does not mean banks are going to lend to that business entity. In fact, they didn't. So what Ryan and I had to do is we put the property in our own name. Then we run the cash flow, the expenses, the profits, all of that through the LLC, build up some credit, get some steam rolling, maybe buy another property in just our own names. We can potentially transfer it later into the LLC, build up that business within the LLC where you can see checks coming in, expenses being paid, all these things, and then you can start the business lending out of the LLC. And I think that's what's important for people to know. You're not just going to open up an LLC and then banks are going to say, oh, you have a business? Here, we'll lend to you. Like, we have to build up that reputation within our LLC. So we're going to run all of our cash flow and everything through there. And once we have a couple properties under our belt, then we can talk about commercial loans and business lending and getting 20-year notes and all the things that the Stealthy Rich does that they do on their with their LLCs and their businesses.
Yes. So awesome point to bring home.
Yeah.
So let's talk now. Let's transition. We talked a little bit about Section 8 and how people, you know, don't be too scared of Section 8. It's so daunting. However, we had a pretty interesting story, and it has not been the easiest walk in the park for us.
No, it hasn't. But I think it's COVID mixed with Section 8. It's the perfect storm.
That's fair.
Right? Because what happened was, so the way Section 8 works, at least in New Jersey, is that once a year you can raise the rents. So long story short, I guess our tenant is probably paying 60 to 70% of fair market value currently, okay? So she really needs an increase like 30% or so. She knows it. She's willing to help, you know, to pay it. But what happened was is that we had to come and go in contact with Section 8, the housing authority, and just finding out the details of transferring the ownership and the details of how do we go about the process of raising rents. So you and I must have sent 10 emails, literally left a voicemail with every single person that worked at the office.
Probably 40 voicemails.
Yeah, and sometimes you just have to do that. We showed up at the city hall of the town where the housing authority was, and the police officer outside was like, yo, you guys literally can't be here. And we're like, why not? And he's like, because it's COVID, so leave.
We're like, no, we're raising the rent, so where do we go? And he's like, use this little drop box. It was a cardboard cutout. He's like, drop your papers in there. I'm like, there's no way someone's going to answer us if we do that.
He's like, nobody's here. I'm like, it's 4:30. Someone's here. Everyone was walking out of the building. Anyway, they literally wouldn't let us in. Finally, we got the supervisor's phone number. We connected with him. Ended up being a nice guy. And we are on our way to, he said, look, you can't raise the rent till June.
Well, that was the bad news. So I had to call you and tell you that, which sucked.
Yeah.
But basically there's a cycle where, Section 8 starts there. They have a term year. It goes, in our case, it was June to June. And essentially within that time period, you essentially can't raise the rent, even if it's not at the fair market value. So you have to wait 60 days prior to the closing of the next year. So for us, it'd be April, where we have
June 1
that we have to notify them, hey, we want to raise rent due to this. Here are the comps or like other values of the properties around us. And this is why it should be raised to this. So we didn't know that going into it, unfortunately. So we have to wait another X amount of months.
Yeah, we have to wait like what, almost 6 months?
Yeah.
No, 8 months?
8 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a little.
But here's the thing. Dagger. The numbers worked at the current rents. And I think I want to emphasize that to people. The numbers for our $400 a month threshold, and it, again, I said it was higher, but they worked at the current rents. And both rents for each side were under market value. The other one was a little bit higher, but those tenants left. So actually, I can tell. I mean, I can just give the numbers. So, the tenant that left was paying $1,075 for a two bed. And Ryan and I are renting, we put on the market, we're going to talk about our marketing, for $1,300, and we've got 50 people reaching out probably in the last week, so we know we can rent it for $1,300. So think about that. That's an extra $225 right there worth of cash flow just by when somebody who's living there for 5 years, the previous seller didn't raise the rents. I mean, it's his choice. It was his business. He could do what he wants with it. He didn't want to raise it. We're going to get it to fair market value, and then maybe we don't raise it next year or the year after. You know, you don't want to be
see other marketplace.
Yeah. And like, so, but to get it to fair market value, we're going to find an extra $225 worth of cash flow just on the one unit.
Right. And the point we want to kind of illuminate here is that you have to do things unconventionally. Sometimes we literally hopped in the car and drove down to the courthouse. It was one of those things was like, well, this is the only way we're going to get in touch with anyone. And we got the supervisor's name. Went around about three more calls, but it was way less than 40. And then we finally got in touch with someone. And so we're well on our way right there. But we are now, it's kind of funny. We have one of the units is Section 8 that we're going to learn the whole process. And then it's going to help us for the next one if we want to go plug two tenants in for Section 8.
Yeah. But somebody from Section 8 just reached out to us. And I said to her, I said, I don't have a lot of experience yet with it, but we're not opposed to it. So just let's talk about your story. And then we can get into that now, the marketing process for the vacant unit, like what we're doing, right?
Yes. So yeah, let's dive into the marketing process and kind of this, I guess, the systems that we're going to use to manage your business.
Yeah, so Cozy was recently acquired by apartments.com, which kind of sucks actually. I don't hate apartments.com. That's not the reason why I'm saying that. It's just that Cozy was a little bit more user-friendly. But so apartments.com bought Cozy, and essentially now, instead of allowing tenants to do a free application and then follow it up later with a background check and a credit report, you have to do that all at once. So the tenants have to pay $25 to apply, and some of them are turned off by that. And some of that I understand. Like, you're going to make me pay $25 before I can see the unit. So anyway, Ryan and I kind of changed our strategy. We came up with the process of asking five major questions of these tenants when they reach out to us after we marketed the property on apartments.com. So we put the apartment up, or we put the two bed, one bath on apartments.com. We said all the nice things about it. We went there and we took really quality photos of the floor, good angles, the backyard, and made sure that we had 30 photos just so people could see everything. I hate when there's listings up with like five photos, right? You don't know what you're looking at. So we put it up there, and then apartments.com blasts it out to their network. And then we also put it on Zillow. Zillow puts it on Trulia, because Zillow apparently bought Trulia, I didn't know this, and Hotpads. So it sends it out to there. And then we also put it on Craigslist just to get as many eyes on it as possible. And we've got, you know, a decent amount of people reaching out to us. So we know that we're going to be able to get that rent around that market rent. And the questions we're asking is, do you have any prior evictions? What is your credit score? Would anything come up on a background check? What do you do for a living? How much income do you make? Because we want the income to rent ratio to be three times higher, the income to be three times higher or more than the rent. Sorry, so I was a little bit long-winded there, but that is kind of the process. And then I said all these tenants are reaching out to us. One of the platforms that we use is called OpenPhone. They have not paid us. I wish they would pay us. They haven't paid us anything to say this about them, but they're $10 a month, and essentially you can get a phone linked up to an email address, and it's kind of like Google Voice, but it was hard for us to share a Google Voice because you can't really share the same number. So we thought OpenPhone was good, and it's $10 a month. So
we can both have the app. We both have the app. We get all the texts that come in and all the calls. It just depends on who's going to field it and who's going to reach out to the prospect.
Here was the issue with Google Voice. The issue with Google Voice is that it ties to your Gmail address, and you can only have one base number, like your actual number that you use with AT&T or Verizon, tied to a Google Voice. And I have one for my other units. So you would be fielding calls
for your other units.
My other units. Right. And it's just like, let's just get OpenPhone. Took us a little while to get started, but OpenPhone's been great. I mean, we're texting from there. We're taking calls from there. It pops up as a whole, like a purple screen, so you know that it's OpenPhone. It's not your regular phone. And then we're using G Suite for organization. We have a expense income
tracker
in there, and that's literally listed out like your income, all your expenses. It does the math for you. So when Open Phone, we got billed today, you probably didn't even notice, but I'm a psycho. I put the $10 there's a phone category. I put the $10 in, so we had the prorated rent, the $10. We're not paying our mortgage till a month or so. So we just see it every time a bill comes in. That's why we set up the bank account. That this bank account that we have is just tied to this property.
Can't say more amazing things about Open Phone so far. We've had such a good experience. I would say G Suite is something we live by too. So people talk about Excel and Microsoft Word and all that stuff. But like for G Suite, essentially what you can do, it's essentially an Excel spreadsheet that you can share and be editing at the same time.
Yeah, it's a Google Doc, Excel spreadsheet, your email. I mean, G Suite's got it all. They got it all figured out. G Suite's like the whole encompassing thing.
It's amazing.
So it's I think we're going to run our numbers from there for the foreseeable future, unless we get to a point where we get to 15, 20 units and we have a property manager and want to use like Buildium or something, but we're not at that stage yet. So G Suite's really good. And then we have a shared email address that we have tied to our LLC, and you know, whoever gets to these things first will be emailing back. You can see the replies, and that's really what works well with the partnership. So,
yes. So those are our systems and kind of how we're going through everything right now. And we already talked about tenant screening and things, but I just to give you kind of a walkthrough on, we get calls fielded from Open Phone. We call back the prospective tenant, I guess that you say,
yep.
Ask them all the questions that Corey said. Any prior evictions, what's your credit score, background check, what's your income,
who
do you work for specifically, why are you moving? I think it's huge to ask that too. Is like, you get a lot of red flags if someone needs to immediately move into a property, they want to pay all cash, just a couple of red flags that you want to be aware of. So we ask them these questions, but more so just to put a voice to the company and the property.
Absolutely.
Right? Like we talk about relationships all the time. We know that we're going to fill the unit much easier, quicker, if we build a relationship with this tenant. And not only are they excited about the property, but like, oh, I can work with these guys. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, and you just want to be familiarize yourself with them. And like, I think that's totally a great point. At first, it's funny. The first 4 days, I was just replying with emails and text. We didn't get a lot of traction. And then I'm like, dude, we should just call all these people back. And we called them. They're like, oh, hey, like, this isn't normal. Thanks for calling. Like, I appreciate you reaching out. And we're like, yeah, like, just being friendly. I don't want to use the word like being cool, because it's like it's just like being real and being friendly,
genuine.
And just like genuine and like, what's your situation? Caring about what their situation is. We've got calls about people who are telling me they used to be homeless, you know, and I'm like, I don't know for a fact if I'm going to be able to rent to this person necessarily, but I'm all about giving second chances in the right scenario. So like, that's what we do, right? It's been fun, kind of.
I called you today. I go, dude, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
I just to get to know, I'm a people guy.
Exactly.
People person, so
we're
I
in
like
the people
to,
business, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like what it is.
It's cool to get, you know, you're going to do something nice for someone. You're providing a home. And it's cool getting to know everybody's story and like where they're at in life. And we've rented before. So it's so cool to put, I'm putting myself back in the shoes of when I was renting. So I thought about, we can talk about this candidly, is like when you go to apply for am I going to fill an application for a property and pay $25 before I even see it? Probably not.
So that's why we shifted, right? We said, okay, we're going to ask the 5 questions. We're going to get them to see the property. And then we're going to say, look, if we're serious about you, we got to have you fill out the application and do the background check and the credit report, because we need to verify these things. And then they're like, oh, okay, I have a chance. Not a freaking number that's applying to a bunch of places. Why would they want to?
It's like applying for a job where your resume goes in the black hole.
Yeah.
If you don't put a face or a voice to the name.
And if you want to outsource these things, like, we're not saying that you as the business owner has to be the one that does this. Hire a property manager, have them do it, which I think we will get to a point where we do that. But for now, it's almost like our baby, and you don't want it to be. We want to make sure that we're communicating the way that we would communicate, not that voicing from someone else, right?
You need to go through, I firmly believe you need to go through the experiences first time around before you hire it out to someone else, because then you know what to expect. Someone could charge you way more. You're like, wait, you're going to charge me X amount of dollars to do this when I know I can do this
and you
way
can
cheaper?
Train too. And you can train the property manager
to do your style.
Exactly.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. So another thing that we do, and to set up showings, we just found this out, because of COVID and social distancing and people not wanting to get too close, we've set up Calendly appointments where you can literally set up a link on Calendly. You can share your calendar. They don't get to see, the people don't see your other events on it, but you can set up, I'm free from 9 a.m. to 12 on Saturday. I'm free from 6 to 8 on Sunday. I'm free from 5 to 9 on Monday. And you can put it there, send them the link, text the prospective tenants the link, and then they can click on a 30-minute time frame to come out and view the property. And then when they leave, somebody else can come in. And that way it's not like this big open house, you know, right now, because it's probably not the smartest thing to do, where you have 25 people showing up. And quite frankly, I don't like the dynamic of that anyway, because it's just, it's like competition. I mean, maybe for a landlord, it does push tenants to move a little bit quicker, but I'd rather have my time to just, look, I'm just going to carve out 3 hours. I think you're busy, right? You'd probably do it, or you definitely would do it. If I was busy, I'm going to carve out 3 hours. One day, I'm going to take 6 appointments. We're going to talk about it, and then we're going to make a decision.
We talked about it. It's important, at least for the first one, I think it's important that we're both there.
Yeah, you know, right, for the first couple.
Just to get a feel for it. Like, yeah. This is the vibe. I want to know exactly, if I can't make it, what I'm getting Corey into, yeah. And vice versa. And also, like, if we actually are going to, I hate to say hire someone, if we're going to accept someone as a tenant, I want to get to know them a little bit. And first impressions are key,
It's a
right?
business partner. It's right? Not even like a hire. It's like it's a partner.
They're paying you. Yeah. It's interesting. So, you know, that's our kind of setup here for showings with Calendly. I would say Coach Carson uses this too. I swear by it.
He was the one who introduced it to me. I had no idea what Calendly was. And now I'm like, this is great. Like I it's literally a link and you can just select the time slot and you get an email verification, and we're excited about it. I think we're going to be able to show the property and hopefully get it rented out a month before we even have our first mortgage.
Yeah.
Ideally, right? But you can pay property managers and you can pay realtors to list it and do it for you. Oftentimes, they'll take first month rent. For us, it wouldn't be the end of the world if we did that. Like, if we don't have, if in the next week we end up not getting anyone, we'll probably say, hey, Jeff, can your team take this off our hands? Just because we're busy and I don't have 4 days a week to go show the property, right?
Right.
So just to recap for people, the duplex in New Jersey that we're purchasing, or we already purchased, it is a 2-bed, 1-bath on one side and a 2-bed, 1-bath on the other side. We purchased it for about $175,000. And essentially, the current rents are about $2,025. That was with both tenants in each side, $2,025. So the one unit rents for $950 with Section 8 total, which again, $1,200 to $1,300 is fair market value in the area. So we're probably going to be able to get $1,300 for the other side. Just with $1,300 on one side and $950 on the other side, we're thinking it'll be somewhere between $600 and $700 a month in cash flow. Once we get the other side to maybe, let's say we get it to $1,200, we're probably going to be at around $800-$900 a month in cash flow, potentially higher. And those are conservative numbers because we're using, we put in 6%, just to be conservative, 6% for vacancy, 6% for capital expenditure, 6% for maintenance. So that's 12% for essentially CapEx and maintenance there. And, you know, we use those numbers. We did not factor in property management, which is, I know we've talked about that, to factor in our numbers. That's not a part of this equation.
We
will for next time. Again, either way, what we'd be doing is just taking out a portion of that cash flow and paying ourselves for now, because we are the property managers. So, yeah, $600-$700 a month in cash flows is really good in this area. We're excited about it. We got a good deal. And I think that once we can get it stabilized, it'll be even higher. But we'll update everyone on where we, you know, maybe we have to replace the furnaces in the first year. We won't make that cash flow, right?
Right.
But in the future, we will.
Projections right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you can do. And that's why you have your income expense tracker. You can reflect back and say, we projected 600 to 700, we made 555. Okay. It's good to know. It's just, so instead of 12% for vacancy and capital expenditure or maintenance and capital expenditures, it was actually more like 14%. Maybe next year it'll be 9, you know? So mm-hmm. It's never gonna be an exact science, but it's just good to know. I think I'm going to start using the 6%, 6%, 6% as opposed to 5, 5, and 5 for the vacancy, CapEx, and maintenance, just because why not be more conservative with COVID? And just
I'd like to hair or edge on the side of caution and conservativeness I'm saying this wrong, but like whatever. I'm way more, I like being conservative just in the fact of like, okay, at least I'm covered.
Yeah, exactly. And we're talking about, when we say 6%, we're talking about of the total rent.
Yes.
So people know.
All right. So that brings us to what?
Last drop, baby.
Last drop.
I told you.
It feels better.
We knew.
Sheesh.
Damn. Yeah. So the last drop, and we said this earlier, but the next three episodes is our idiot selves trying to decide still, even though the people have spoken, the tribe has spoken, the juicers let us know that it should be the last drop. So ignore the name of it in the next three episodes.
Yeah, we've confused people enough, so we apologize. It is not the fresh squeeze of the week. That was
dust.
My bad on that. So we're back to the last drop.
It wasn't.
If it's not
bad.
Broke, don't fix it, baby. So, all right. Corey, let's ask you this one. I think we each have one this week. I think you can go with that guy and I'll go with that guy. So, what?
I don't do that.
You? Yeah, you do. Well,
secretly you do.
We can't use it. All right, we'll use mine. I guess I'll do this again. So, here's a book that I'm currently reading. It's called The Tribe of Millionaires. So, essentially, have you ever... I'll ask the audience this because this is how I felt. Have you ever felt like you're this... it's not to be... pump myself up here, but have you ever felt like you're the smartest person in the room, or you can't have certain conversations with certain people? Like, Corey and I talk about this all the time. He's like, dude, you're literally the only one I can talk to about this that actually gets it and wants to live a certain way and is thinking about money and investing in a certain way.
It might just be on a specific topic, though, right? Like, this, when you say the smartest person in the room, it might just be about a specific thing, or no? Are you talking about more broad?
No, I put it this way. I just think this. I'm relating this book back to basically what the mantra of it is. Basically, they talk about building up a team around you that is smarter than you,
yeah,
and is doing things that you want to do. So essentially, in this book, it talks about a small group or niche of people that are, they're millionaires, and this one guy essentially is forced to surround himself by them, and they end up, and he's not on their level yet, and they end up bringing him up,
yeah,
to their level.
Yep.
And so specifically, you and I have talked about this, is like, dude, like, we talk about real estate all the time, or we talk about wanting to save money, more money than we spend, or invest in proper ways. And I find myself starting to like preach it and teach it to other people, and I'm like, dude, like,
like, who am I?
Specifically, yeah. I don't know why I'm even saying this. I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but clearly I'm more educated on the topic than them. And I'm like, I need to now surround myself with other people and,
yeah,
level up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took me a while to get to that and explain that. But I think this book is specifically for those people. Is like, it just talks about, it's called The Tribe of Millionaires, and he surrounds himself with these people due to the death of his father. He doesn't even mean to do this. He kind of falls into it. And I'm almost done reading it, but I've been hooked as soon as I picked it up. And it takes me a while, because usually I'm reading informational books on self-help and how to get better. This one actually is like a parable, and it walks through a story of how he comes to this. And it's a fictional story, but based on real-life events. These guys are New York best-selling authors that wrote it, and they all collabed.
That's really cool. I've never heard of the book, and I definitely want to read it, because I would strive to be the... I don't want to use the word dumbest, but like, if I'm the least smart person in the room, I think I'm in the right room.
Because you can only get better.
Exactly. Like, that you're going to get elevated to the situation that other people are in around you. So try to be the dumbest person in the room, people.
Yeah. So I highly recommend it. It's for entrepreneurs out there and people striving to be great. Give it a try. And it's an easy read, super easy read. So it's called The Tribe of Millionaires. And we'll link it into our Instagram stories here soon.
Awesome. Thanks for listening this week. Please like, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts. Really, really helps us out. We've had some really cool feedback so far. We hope to continue it. Guys, our next three episodes they're all studs. And they've just, in their specific niches and their specific industries, they're superstars. And I'm really excited about it. So again, we've previously recorded them, but just a couple weeks ago. So it's going to be really, really cool for you guys here.
Some of the names, if you follow real estate investing, you're going to know. So
yeah,
get excited. And we will catch you guys here next Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Have a good one.